Chapter 21.
What did you say, you diseased little pustule?
Captain Lerman snarled at Bowden, as he slowly twisted the point of the sharp blade under the raccoon man's chin, until I could see a crimson bead of his blood roll down the shiny metal of the dagger.
I didn't say anything,
Bowden stuttered, as he attempted to remain still so he wouldn't accidentally force the manta ship into a greater list than she already was. Lerman, I'd appreciate it if you didn't skewer one of the only other people on this thing who knows how to pilot it, I drawled, like I didn't really care either way. If you do kill him, I will have to stay down here and eat my meal. I'm not a fan of ingesting bugs with my food.
He spoke falsely about my pride,
the pirate captain barked, and leaned even more into Bowden's space. This had the unfortunate effect of giving the wheel a large shove to the right, and with it, the whole manta ship dipped and crashed into the pier. Anwar screamed and clutched onto Aiken, and out of reflex, Amaya, as gravity shifted her with the motion. As for me, I rode the violent tilt of the ship's list, and I was able to get Bowden and throw them both off the wheel so I could correct the problem.
You fool!
I hissed at the raccoon man.
I didn't say anything, he said,
as he scrambled back up to his feet. With the back of his hand, he swiped at the blood under his chin, and then he removed his cap so he could fidget with it.
Slander!
The pirate man gasped, and brandished the dagger again like he wanted to throw it straight through the other man's heart. But I caught his wrist before he could.
Every word from his mouth is dripping with lies!
I stared at him for a beat and made sure the expression on my face didn't give away any of my confusion at the sudden turn in his demeanor. Whatever the case, it was plain to see how agitated Bowden made the panda man, and I figured the best thing for everyone would be to send him away for now.
Leave us,
I thundered at the raccoon man, and he scurried up the ladder. Then I turned to the captain and the rogue and arched an imperious eyebrow.
Masterful lordship, Krev Brightwood,
Lerman teased, and I played along by rolling my eyes. Would you like any of them? I asked. They all bore me, to tell you the truth.
You are a loon,
the red panda man said as he shook his chubby head.
You act like you don't have everything at your feet right now. I understand Brightwood is too renowned of a character for you to masquerade around long term, but you could at least enjoy this part like you used to.
You mean pretending to be an Asher? I asked, as I took my position at the wheel.
Well, yeah,
he said, as he stood up on his toes so he could see what I was doing over my shoulder.
Some of the random duelists you've absorbed in the past in between taking over your long-term host have been low ranks. Now you're using a rank 6 to recoup your power. A rank 6 with traveler powers as well, and you don't want to have a little fun with it?
Oh, fun, I sighed in the most unenthused voice I could muster. And then I placed my palm on the shining power source housed in its setting. From there, it was just a matter of mentally commanding the manta ship to float upward and back so it could pull away from the destroyed pier.
How does this work, then, Krev Brightwood?
Aiken asked in his greedy little voice as he took his place behind my left shoulder and peered down at what I was doing. Making this vessel fly is simply a matter of mental fortitude and a strong conviction of will, I replied by rote, as I tried to summon my inner Mr. Jenner. If I want to go higher, I simply think about doing so, thusly. Then I summoned some of the power I normally use to draw out the time trance, and I steered the manta ship up and away from the harbor. Based on some of the notes left on the console in Bowden's hand, I knew if I wanted to put the ship on a heading back the way we just came from, I just had to follow the directions in reverse. This meant, as long as I was pointing the Aventolian compass to the symbols that were the opposite of what was written, and then adjusted the sails according to the wind, I would put us in a position where we would be able to see Lake Lacuna with ease. I tried to remember how long it took for us to make the journey the first time, but I'd been preoccupied in the library at the time. By my estimation, it took us about 3 to 4 hours, so that should be plenty of time for our feast as well as to let the surprise ingredients take effect. So far, so good. Not much longer now.
And you're not even having the least bit of fun with flying this thing?
The red panda man teased me again. But there was something different about his tone this time. Instead of the easygoing nature of the banter before, there was a slight edge to Lerman's tone that could almost be called bitter. It was almost like being scorned by well-wishers after winning the lottery. There was something malicious in the pirate captain's undertone, and when I glanced at him, I could even see the spark of jealous meanness in his squinty eyes. Good. I almost wanted to laugh out loud like some maniacal wizard, as my manipulations seemed to be working. But then Rogue Aiken suddenly shot me a suspicious look after his arm brushed against mine. Immediately I moved out of touching distance, but made it seem as if I was naturally trying to maneuver the wheel in order to catch the wind. Then I tamped down whatever glee and excitement I had whenever I thought about finally ending this charade and exacting my revenge with the full ruthlessness of the goddess's conviction behind me. The puzzled glare the rogue augur shot me, along with the tightening of his fingers around Anwar's wrist, reminded me we weren't out of the woods just yet, and I turned my attention back to the ship as well as my guests.
Maybe a little bit of fun, I grudgingly admitted, and let us accelerate on a warm updraft of air until we were rapidly ascending. For the time being, this seemed to be enough of a distraction for both Lerman and the rogue, and I hoped the theatrics of the marvelous mantis ship were enough for Aiken to forget the momentary spike of my anticipation. Especially when the Ibex woman on his arm suddenly freaked the fuck out at the fact that the harbor was now way far away, and we were basically in the clouds.
Don't worry, pet.
The rogue attempted to calm the frantic mage down, but she was having none of it, which only added to the hilarity of the situation.
What's happening?
Anwar shrieked, and instead of stepping in to help, both Amaya and Horace glanced at each other once, and then at the way the Ibex woman was attempting to climb the skinny rogue like a tree, and not in the sexy way. Then, with one more glance back at each other, they both stepped bodily away from the circus taking place.
Will one of you act?
Aiken's words were cut off as one of Anwar's heeled boots clocked the guy right in the nards when she squirreled her legs around his waist from behind. I wasn't sure if she was afraid of heights or something on the deck at this point, because I didn't know what keeping your feet off the floor would accomplish in assuaging the heights thing.
What?
Horace yelled when Aiken attempted to ask the Falcon Man, of all people, for assistance.
I can't hear you over the wind!
I almost lost it when Amaya joined in on the I can't hear you game by staring straight ahead with a dissociative expression on her face. Because she knew me so well, I didn't even have to manifest the thought of wondering what she was thinking about inside her head. And it only took a second before she pushed something through the bond. A small, dancing pillowcase?
Casper, the friendly ghost, the friendliest ghost you know.
Curse her. So, while that circus was going on, I applied myself to steering the flying castle ship. This happened to be a good strategy to take my mind off the laughter I wanted to let out at the sight of my best friend's shit-eating grin. But it became apparent our heading had us sailing against the grain, so to speak. I knew now it would take us a little longer because we would have to tack the ship in a zigzagging motion upwind. This was now going to add at least an hour onto however much time we were already going to use to get there, and I suddenly realized we were going to run into a problem when it came to timing. If we had our feast right away, then I would have a castle full of pirates with explosive diarrhea on my hands and nowhere for them to shit. And since I really wanted to keep my awesome flying mansion at the end of this adventure, that was a serious problem. I was going to have to think on my toes and improvise a little longer if I wanted the timing to be right. Apparently, that type of entertainment is not to everybody's tastes or preference, I drawled, when I slowed the mantis ship's ascent and let her drift in the direction of what an Earthian compass would read as northwest. But maybe we can put off the feast a little longer for something a little more palatable?
What in a blazing comet are you talking about?
Captain Lerman jumped down from where he'd somehow folded himself over the ledge of the wheelhouse's safety railing. His copper-colored beard and scraggly white eyebrows were wind-whipped after his Titanic moment, and he had a grin that showed practically every one of his pointed yellow teeth.
That was great! I'm glad you think so, but your brutish shape-shifting friend has traumatized my beloved mage. And as long as this palatable entertainment is indoors, I would be obliged,
Rogue Aiken said, in a persnickety way that was the complete opposite of what his Night of the Living Dead look would imply. It shall be held in the ballroom once I can get us on course, I promised the skeletal man, as I kept my eyes on the horizon.
Good,
he said, as he brought the Ibex woman down from where she was still clinging to his back like an orangutan. He then forced her to tuck her hand into the crook of his elbow and patted it when she leaned into him as if she was suddenly tired. Horace saw this, and his once good humor evaporated at the sight of his love cuddling against another man after such a harrowing ordeal. After the close call I'd had with the rogue, I quickly smothered the pang of sympathy that wanted to bubble up at the sight of my best friend's turmoil. We were so close to ending this. So I channeled the anger I felt at these two deplorable men, four, including the brothers Alda, for orchestrating this outright treachery. And with that channeled and built-up anger, I released some of it onto the Falcon Man in order to stay in character.
"Servant!"
I barked, and Horace jumped and shot me a glare. "Please tell my first wife I want to see her down here after you show our guests where they will be staying with the others. And while you're at it, inform our chef we will be delaying our meal aside from wine, brandy, and any other spirits the last poor bastard of this place has lying around."
"Ha!"
Captain Lerman cheered as he held up an imaginary tankard.
"I could sure go for a drink or several, my friend."
"I'm sure you would," I said. "Follow my manservant to the ballroom where he will have everything ready for our banquet's entertainment."
"Come along, pet,"
Aiken said, as he maneuvered Anwar toward the ladder with a bony hand at the small of her back. The type of corset and gown number she was wearing actually left a small window above her hips that was titillatingly exposed. And when the rogue caressed his spidery fingers along the dip of her spine, Horace's black feathered crest ruffled up in agitation. I felt bad for my friend, but at the same time, his anger and frustration was just another thing to throw the deadly auger off our scent.
"After you, Captain Lerman," the Falcon Man gritted out through his teeth, and gestured for the Panda Man to go up on ahead of him.
"Don't keep me waiting, servant," I remarked in the same dead tone I defaulted to with everybody, but the message was clear. Hurry. Horace nodded briefly, but no words were exchanged between us. And after he left, I focused on slowing and then turning the manta ship so I could then zigzag it back in a direction that would be considered southwest. Just like traditional sailing, it was possible to travel into a headwind as long as the sailing vessel approached it at a 45-degree angle. The hatch to the galley entrance creaked open again, and down came my catwife one step at a time, and I tried my hardest not to ogle her long, sinful legs in those patent leather thigh-high boots. For all intents and purposes, her little Borat thong number was designed for both humiliation and punishment. And I wondered how many times she had been forced to don such a skimpy piece of cloth. It probably had the worst possible memories tied to it. And here I was, internally slobbering over how hot she looked.
"Horace said you summoned me, husband,"
Zoe relayed and slinked toward me one deliberate step at a time. Her hands were clasped demurely down in front of her, but this made it so her barely clad breasts were inadvertently pushed together and up in order to accentuate her cleavage. She knew what she was doing, I was sure of it, the little temptress. "I would like both of my wives to put on a show of sorts. What do you have in mind for this?" I asked, after I tore my eyes away from the delectable sight of her soft breasts. "Not the time or place, Alex."
"Shay and I have been sparring as of late,"
my naughty catwife said.
"Would it please my lord to see a demonstration?"
"It would please me greatly," I said in a hoarse voice as I watched her trail her fingers down between her round breasts. A beat rife with tension blazed between us as we held one another's charged gazes.
"I think I'm beginning to understand,"
Zoe started to whisper.
But before she could get the rest of the thought out, I locked the ship's wheel down and then pushed her up against the spiral staircase. With my mouth, I bit a furious and claiming kiss into her lips while I pressed the length of our bodies together so she could feel the bulge growing in my trousers. Then, with one hand, I attempted to clear her mind of all thoughts by grabbing the scruff of her neck in the way I knew she adored. I figured there was a good chance the rogue might be caught up with the rest of the tour Horace was leading them on, so it was safe to let out just a little of my true passion for this woman. Despite her being a little bit of a pain in my ass when it came to her sexy shenanigans, she was stirring up enough chaos with the rowdy pirate gang to add another layer of hopefully strong and bombarding feelings for the rogue to sift through. It wasn't that I liked the idea of 24 or so men ogling my wife as she strutted her gorgeous body around for these horny sailors to lap up. But if it added to the miasma of emotions acting as my smokescreen, then I would take it. Especially if I could rile her up a bit before I sent her back. Her pale skin always flushed with the prettiest pink hue when she was aroused, and her sapphire eyes held a spark that only lust could bring to them. The Varthan warrior looked and felt dangerous and full of seductive potential, and as long as she knew who she belonged to, I didn't mind if others took a peek. Let them imagine. Zoe was mine. My wife couldn't even get out my full name before I basically dominated her again and spun her around so her back was to me. "Do you know what you're doing to me? Running around like that?" I growled. And then I pressed my cheek against hers from over her shoulder. "You want to be punished, don't you?"
Yes.
She breathed as she rubbed her firm ass against my now full-on erection.
"I want you to..."
A loud purr erupted from my wife's chest when I decided to move aside the front part of her outfit with my fingers so I could dip one inside. It was almost like checking potting soil to see if the flower bed was moist by poking a finger into the folds of the earth, and I was pleasantly surprised to discover just how ready she felt by her hot silken wetness. My fingers came away from her petal pussy lips with a slick sheen of her perfume-like musk, and I followed my impulse to smear her essence over her own lips so she was forced to taste herself.
"I want you to mark me,"
she said, as her pupils dilated to saucers. I didn't reply. Instead, I forced her to face straight ahead, wrapped one arm around her chest like the shoulder strap of a seatbelt, and then with my other hand, I immediately filled her pussy with my middle two fingers. Zoe moaned as her walls tightened strongly around the intrusion. Even though she was wet, she usually required a little more foreplay to get her relaxed enough to take two of my thick fingers up to the hilt right away. As it stood, it felt as if we were right on the threshold of what was intense without being painful for her. It was a good look on her, particularly when she couldn't help but arch her back even more, so my fingers were at least nudging the spot she wanted them to. "Yes, wife," I bit out and rubbed my swollen dick against her perfect backside, just to take the edge off. "Only I can make you feel this good, don't you forget."
"Oh, yes, my lord,"
Zoe nearly screamed when I moved my wrist just so, in order to get my thumb in the right area so I could rub tiny circles around her throbbing clit. She inhaled sharply as an orgasm took her by surprise, and the arm I had around her chest had to tighten when her legs trembled and nearly buckled. I helped her climax along with my other hand, and she ground against me to prolong the sensations. "Wasn't this pretty?" I chuckled darkly as she writhed against me in a helpless fashion. And I didn't know if it was just the scene we were getting into, or what. But my dick was a hard rod in my pants, and I knew we were going to have a quick and dirty ride in the wheelhouse.
"Mark me,"
she demanded again, and splayed herself over the wheel. If the thing wasn't locked, we might have had another sharp keeling situation on our hands, which would have been a disaster and totally would have killed the mood. Instead, I internally praised myself for being smart enough to remember to lock the thing after all so it could now be the perfect thing to support my minx of a wife as she pushed her ass out
lifted her tail, and moved aside the thin material covering her sweetest of places. When I approached, I couldn't help but spread her rosy pussy lips apart, so I could gaze at that gorgeous pink tunnel before I loosened my trousers and hurriedly pulled myself out. Then, with a firm but smooth motion, I pushed my cock into her tight and slick channel, without stopping until my hip slammed against her gorgeous backside.
Ugh!
She yelped as the air was punched out of her, and the little sound flipped a switch inside my caveman brain, because I dedicated my life in that moment solely to getting her to make more of them. We fucked like frenzied animals in the heat after that, and I couldn't get enough of the sensation of burying myself as hard and as deep inside of her as I could. Then I used my considerable mass to manhandle her away from the wheel and onto all fours, so I could really dig her out at the angle she needed to keep squeezing me so deliciously. At one point I actually came inside of her, but my cock remained hard like it sometimes did with Nova, and I kept fucking her through it when my catwife shouted at me to keep going at the top of her lungs.
Yes, like that! Oh, goddess!
Zoe all but roared, and I was glad we were outside so our carnal sounds were carried away by the wind rushing around us.
Oh, fuck!
I yelled, and the squelching of our combined fluids leaked out around my shaft and just added to the wonderfully slick sensation that possessed my hips to keep pumping into her.
Come inside me again, husband,
Zoe ordered as my pumping rhythm grew frantic and stuttered like I hadn't just orgasmed a moment ago.
Deep inside me, so you can fill me with your strong kits. Oh.
I couldn't tell who set off who, but one of us triggered the other into near simultaneous climaxes that had me pushing my catwife flush against the deck so I could fuck my seed as deep inside of her as possible. Zoe practically sobbed as she jerked and twitched through the pent-up waves of pleasure that had nowhere to go. And as much as she wanted to flex and buck her hips, I held her down throughout it all. It was honestly one of the most powerful experiences of my life with another human being. And even though I came twice, I knew I would have taken her again and again until she forgot how to speak if there was time. For now, I gently guided my wife through her overwhelming orgasm, and I rubbed her back until her shaking turned more into gentle shudders. When we'd calmed down a bit and I carefully disengaged from Zoe's pussy, but I suddenly found myself with an armful of my wife.
What are you trying to do to me?
I graveled out, as she immediately butted up under my chin.
I want as much of your natural scent as possible all over me,
she said as she undulated against me. My wet cock was still outside of my pants, so when she curled up against me, some of our combined juices smeared between us.
That can be arranged, I said,
and twisted my fingers into her ebony hair and pulled slightly.
I need you to continue to be a good little kitten and obey me. Do you understand?
Yes, husband,
Zoe said dutifully, and stepped back once she'd tucked me back into my own trousers.
Once you straighten yourself out, I want you to think long and hard about what you and Shelia could do that is more than just sparring, I commanded, and turned back to the wheel.
I want it to be captivating enough that our guests don't notice the passage of time. Really take your time to come up with something good. I do not want to be disappointed.
Shay has also guided me in some of the dance techniques regarding silken scarves,
my catwife said, as she fixed what passed as clothes for her.
After we fight, we could then dance for some of the men who have been long at sea and would like to see a woman's body move and undulate and become slick with exertion.
You might be onto something, you naughty flirt, I snarled, but kept my back to her. Bowden eventually came back to the wheelhouse once he sensed it was safe to do so, and he skulked back down from the galley. The way he avoided eye contact with me and Zoe made me think he might have heard our quick little jaunt just now, but he was either too shy or too afraid to make a comment. Regardless, I was actually relieved to see him after the debacle with the pirate captain earlier. But instead of asking questions about what had happened, I had to content myself with subtly looking him over as I explained our heading.
"Smooth and steady, Mr. Bowden," I said as I stepped aside.
We want to reach our destination in one piece, and given your propensity to anger our guests, I think it would be best if you stayed in the wheelhouse.
I swear, Master Alex, I did not mean... he began to ramble, but I cut him off.
We'll discuss it later, I barked at him. Come, wife. Then Zoe and I left the wheelhouse, and when we got to the galley, it was to the sight of Horace helping Arvid with a few preparations.
I will take my leave now,
Zoe said, and ran off to find Shay so they could discuss what they were going to do to stall the feast from starting too soon.
Master, Horace acknowledged, everyone has been made aware of the knight's plans and are waiting for you in the banquet hall.
I stared at the Falcon Man and saw him subtly glance at the ceramic pot of gravy being stirred by the Sloth Man. The signal was a clear one. The trap was set, and I knew once I entered the ballroom, there would be no turning back. Let the games begin.